Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte, episode number 62, recorded on June 19th, 2012, with stop-motionista Petra Cross.
TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring the My Ford Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology.
It's time for TWiT Photo! And boy, do we have a jam-packed show today, but let's start, as we always do, by introducing the star of our show, ladies and gentlemen, Catherine Hall from CatherineHall.net.
Thank you, Leo. Good to see everyone here.
You have planned an amazing show.
We have a packed show. Packed show. So we have Joseph Lenoschke from Aperture Expert, or the Aperture Expert, here to talk with us today about Aperture and the new... Tell us, Leo.
Oh, the Retina display, yeah.
Which is pretty
sick. Yeah, I got one right here. Look how thin that is.
Yeah, so we're going to start off with that. And then we have Aria from Prismatic, which I use for all my news, and you use for your news.
I do.
And for photographers, it's particularly good, and we'll get into that. And then we're going to conclude with the highlight of the day with Petra Cross, who's going to be sharing her stop motion techniques with us.
Holy cow.
The stop motionista herself is in studio.
That's exciting.
So it's going to be a big, packed, awesome, exciting show.
But I bet that isn't covered at all, because I bet you even have a tip for us.
Oh, I do have a tip in there as well.
So what is your tip?
We're going to go straight into it.
Well, all right. What would you like to go into? I'm sorry. Don't we usually start with your tip? I'm sorry. You know what? Take it away, Catherine.
Take it away, Leo.
Take it away. Do whatever you wish
to
do.
Well, we're going to start with Joseph, because he's patiently waiting on Skype.
Very patient, I agree.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Joseph Lenoschke of AperturExpert.com. Welcome, sir.
That's the site. That is me. Ooh, Aperture is spelled wrong there, but the Aperture Expert it is.
Aperture.
There's an R in Aperture.
There's an R in Aperture.
Now, you're going to have to... You're talking, Joseph, to a bunch of Lightroom users, I would guess.
And excellent.
So I am going to give you the opportunity to persuade me, and I have to say, I just got a Retina, so yeah. I'm half persuaded already, because Apple has already updated Aperture.
They have. Well, it's a pretty easy persuasion, actually. So there's a lot of new features or new enhancements, and one of the big ones is something they call fast browsing. And ironically, Apple has really made very little noise about this. But what this essentially is a new way of handling the embedded JPEGs and the RAW files. And what this means is that importing and browsing is supposed to be a lot faster. We didn't want to take it at face value, so we actually just completed a round of tests comparing Aperture 3.2, so the older version, to 3.3, the newest one, to Lightroom 4.2, and also to Photo Mechanic. And I got to say, as far as importing images, Lightroom, not so good.
Let me ask you this. So does every camera that... every DSLR, when you shoot RAW, it also embeds a JPEG, right?
That's right.
And that's used for the back screen, if nothing else.
Correct.
But isn't it a low-quality JPEG? I mean, is it really what I want to use when I'm using Aperture?
It is good enough to do your first look at it and decide whether the picture is a keeper or a tosser, and if you're on a really tight deadline, whether it's one you're going to pass off to the editor or whatever it may be. It is, depending on the camera, it could be smaller than full size, but most pro DSLRs are doing full size JPEGs, and the quality is absolutely high enough. And so what you're looking at there is your full resolution image almost instantly drawn to screen, not having to wait for the RAW to be translated or decoded or anything like that. And in fact, the way Aperture does is it pulls those JPEGs out of the RAW files before it even pulls the main file, before it pulls the RAW file itself.
Interesting.
So what we've seen in our test with about 500 images, where it'll actually take about 8 or 9 minutes to copy those files off the CF card, you can actually look at full resolution every single one of those 500 images in about 3 minutes. So you're done looking at them before they're even taken off the card.
That's pretty fascinating. And I have to say, because that's actually been my biggest struggle with Lightroom.
Lightroom's very slow doing that.
I have to use Photo Mechanic because I have thousands of files and I can't import all of them. I can't sit there for them to all import.
My sense is what Lightroom's doing, though, is using Adobe Camera Raw and importing the RAWs and generating its own one-to-one images, because you can set that as a setting.
Is it using? I bet it's not even using the embedded JPEG.
Well, I think you can set it so it does, but it still takes.
Still takes a long time.
And you know, we've heard that a lot about the about using Photo Mechanic. And Thomas Boyd is the photographer who works on After Expert as well. He's a photographer for the Oregonian up in Portland, and he uses this every day. He's a sports shooter. He's shooting every day massive amounts of images. And he said in the pit, he will watch Lightroom users use Photo Mechanic to do their import, or they'll copy off the CF card first and then import into Lightroom. And we've compared all of those scenarios. We took every one that we could come up with and compared them. And After 3.3 isn't a little bit faster. It is a lot faster. It is absolutely kicking butt. And we're going to have those results up on the website later today.
Well, as a Mac user, there's another selling point for me. Aperture and iPhoto now use the same database. So yep. I don't have to have separate photo databases. If I want to just use iPhoto, you know, quickly, I can use that. And then it all translates over to Aperture. So, okay, right. So Retina, faster, iPhoto compatibility. You're starting to win me over. What else?
Those are the big ones. And then there's a couple other improvements. There's the new white balance. Which, have you played with iPhoto on the iPad?
Yeah, love it.
Yeah,
love it.
He's addicted to iPhoto on the iPad.
Love it.
You know the white balance based off of skin tone, the skin tone white balance in there?
Oh, I haven't tried that, no.
That was the first. It was amazing. And you kind of need it on my video right here. It's a little bit of off-white. That was absolutely phenomenal. And as soon as I saw that, I'm thinking, oh, my God, I need this in Aperture. And that's in Aperture 3.3 now. So you can do a white balance based off of skin tone. So you don't always have a white or a perfect gray that you can balance off of.
Right.
Click on skin tone. And the thing about skin tone is interesting is that we are all the same hue. Basically, it doesn't matter what part of the world you're from, how light or dark you are, we're all basically the same hue. We are just different levels of luminance. And so skin is all the same color.
I had no idea. I have learned something here today.
Well, it's a first.
I thought we were different colors. We're just different luminance.
We're different luminance values. That's right. Fantastic, isn't it?
So where would I find that? Is that in the white balance area?
Yeah, in the white balance, I think the default setting is going to be temperature and tint.
Okay.
And if you just click on that little drop-down, you'll see skin tone and you'll see gray. Now, what's really cool about that skin tone thing as well is that if you do an auto white balance and there's a person in your picture, Aperture will detect the face and then automatically switch over to skin tone white balance.
Ah.
Now, that does require that you have faces turned on because it uses the pre-done faces cache for that, or faces database for that. But even if you don't use faces or using faces, just having it turned on for that feature alone is fantastic.
It's smart enough to know that, if you're paying attention to faces, I might as well white balance on that.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And then there's the gray, basic gray white balance automated as well, which if you don't have any people in it is what it's probably going to go to. It's going to go to either that or the tint, and it just depends on the image. You can auto white balance 100 photos and have them all come up differently.
Hmm.
So there's that. And then there's the improved highlights and shadows. And this is an interesting point. And there's I have a big review on After 3.3 on on the After Expert website. But improved highlights and shadows, that's the one right there. Basically, Apple rewrote the algorithm from the ground up. And in doing so, they made it better, more accurate, and easier to use, and took out a bunch of sliders. And a lot of people are kind of complaining about the loss of sliders because they see it as a loss of control. But once you really get into it, it turns out that, you know, for the vast majority of the times, this is a much improved slider. And for those that really want the old one, you can still get it back.
And it's cheaper. If you're really a cheap, it's like $80 compared. Now, they've dropped the price hugely.
They dropped it again.
If you're going to compare it to Lightroom or anything else, yeah, absolutely.
They keep dropping.
If you're just comparing it to the previous Aperture, it's not cheaper. It's free, right? Because it goes from the 3.3 upgrade is a free upgrade.
Right.
And, you know, it's fair to say that a lot of us, myself included, we're expecting a 4.0 by now. But when you really think about it, what's a number? It doesn't really mean anything. In this case, a 4.0 would mean I'd have to shell out another $80. Now it means that it was a free update. So I like free.
So, okay. Joseph, what's your biggest tip with the new Aperture? Biggest, this is awesome, it's worth the upgrade.
It has to be the fast browsing. Just how much of a speed difference it is. Even forget about Lightroom or anything else. Just if you're already an Aperture user going from 3.2 to 3.3, when you import images, especially a large card full of 500 files, the speed is unbelievable how much quicker it is, how much quicker you can get through your photos. If you're on a deadline at all, it's massive. If you're at a wedding and you're shooting at a wedding and you want to get some photos edited to put on a slideshow or show the bride and groom before you leave, you can do it much faster than you ever could before. It's just remarkable.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm using it now.
Now Leo's playing.
Yeah, you convinced me. And I have to say, just because of the Retina, I knew I'd be using Aperture for a while just because of the Retina display, but Those all are pretty convincing arguments.
Yeah, and I got to admit, I haven't even seen it on the Retina display yet.
Ooh,
it's
look.
I know it's terrible.
Ooh,
I live in a small town. There's no Apple Store around here.
That's so beautiful.
I'm from a small town.
That's so
Leo,
mean.
For the viewers that might not know, what makes the Retina display so great? What is it?
The display itself is 2,880 pixels across by 1,800 pixels top to bottom. It's four times the resolution of the same 15-inch MacBook Pro. But you don't really see that benefit unless you're using an application that is Retina aware, as Aperture is. And what it means is, text is automatically going to be scaled, but what you want to see is that your images, the detail is there on the images. And it is really true for a photo retouching program like Lightroom or Aperture. The ability to see great detail is huge.
Yeah.
You know, and
the big point there is that you have to zoom in one-to-one to look at your photos for any fine retouching. Everybody knows, if you don't, you could miss a stray hair, miss a sensor spot or something like that. On that display, because you got four times the pixels, you can see four times as much of your photo at once at one-to-one.
One-to-one is smaller, but it's there.
Smaller.
And,
it's
of course, when you lose the loop, then you're really seeing an amazing amount of detail on it.
Right. Yeah, I did a little bit of quick math on a 21-megapixel image on the former 15-inch MacBook Pro. Basically, the screen size, what it was versus the image, you had 16 tiles. You'd have to pan around the image to look at 16 pieces of it.
Right.
Now it's divided by four. It's only four tiles.
Right.
It's much, much faster for moving through your whole image.
It also just looks better, frankly. So if we go to AperturExpert.com, I guess I'm going to be visiting it to become an Aperture expert. Lots of information.
Please do,
tutorials,
Leo.
And all that
We've
stuff.
Got a support forum on there. Any questions that you have, just click on forums, and you'll see a place to go in there and ask any questions you might have. It's a very, very active forum. A lot of users in there.
Oh, that's good.
And we have a mailing list. We've got training, both free and paid training. There's a ton of stuff on there. So if you haven't been there before, please do check it out.
Thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks, Joseph.
Thank you.
And I was so excited about having Prismatic here, Aria from Prismatic. And I have to say, one of the things as a photographer, I feel like there's an abundance of information out there, just tons of information, but it's hard to shift through it all to find quality. And that's the thing that Prismatic's done for me is it's giving me, doing all the work and bringing me high quality content. How does it know what to give me?
Yeah, so Prismatic looks at a bunch of things when it decides what to show you. And some of them are things like where it's from and how popular that source is. A lot of it is actually looking at the text itself and trying to find technical terminology, which makes us an actual photography article, right? So technical terms that indicate that the author actually is an expert and can actually teach you something. And the other thing that it knows how to do that I think it makes really good for kind of geeking out and people who are into photography or anything really deeply like to geek out about is, it tells you, here are the other articles about filters, right? If you want to go and read a bunch of articles about filters in particular or just color, how should you deal with color in your pictures? It's good for that as well. I think that it looks at that. It looks at the conversations around what's going on. So not just are people linking to this or just linking with a title, but are people saying something meaningful? Is this actually engaging people the other thing.
So what is Prismatic?
Yeah.
So Prismatic is a service that figures out what you're interested in. So digital
photography. It's a web page?
It's currently a web app and soon to be an iPhone app. And what we do is we figure out what you're interested in. So digital photography and cameras and lighting and things like that. Or in my case, science fiction, computer science, and a whole ton of geeky things. And or if you're some mixture of those things. And then what it does is it finds all of the content and stories and articles that are within those interests and finds the best ones and shows them to you. And so it's good for kind of finding things that you already know you like. But actually, part of the reason we built it is because we wanted a way to get into a new area. So, a few weeks ago, I read an article about how memory works. And based upon reading that in Prismatic, it suggested that I might like cognitive science. And I didn't even quite know that the article that I was reading was actually kind of a cognitive science article, but, Prismatic assured me that it was. And then I added cognitive science and interest, and, now I'm reading stuff from old sources that I'd never, thought of reading before.
So it's invitation only right now, but you can go to getprismatic.com and I want an invitation.
Anyone can actually sign up, and you should get an invitation very soon.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And you guys it's evolving and changing. We have profiles now, and it's becoming more interactive in that sense.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, if Petra... So we have these profiles that what we have in a profile is we actually show people if on Petra's machine right now, these are like your interest bubbles. So these are actually based upon...
We're seeing inside your brain right now,
this is
Petra.
Actually,
what is that?
These are what I spend my time doing. And this is incredibly embarrassing.
bubbling.
So this science fiction bubble here is really big because I spend a lot of time reading science fiction and I spend a lot less time reading about Apple. And so this is actually what I'm doing.
This is the profile of a nerd.
This is not your idea of what you're interested in. This is what Prismatic's telling you you read.
Right. For better or for worse, Prismatic is showing you yourself. Not as you want to necessarily present yourself, but what you actually do. And for someone like me who doesn't spend a lot of time kind of presenting a persona, I'm happy to show people that, you know, basically I have the geekiest profile ever. So let me switch to Petra's, which is actually way more relevant to what's going on here. So... Petra's got photography at the center because that's the central interest of hers. That's kind of like linking together all of the things. And she has there's a camera interest and visualization is related and web design. And over feminism. Here you have apparently feminism and San Francisco are near each other, which
we should mention that Petra's husband is your partner.
That's right. My co-founder Brad and our CEO is Petra's husband. That's right.
Yeah. So it's not just like Petra showed up and sitting next to you. It happens that she's a user and has an interest in Prismatic.
So and so
I've been using it for how long? 3 months, something like that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So what's in store for us photo enthusiasts? Are you going to do more photo streaming news, or what can we look forward to?
So there's several things. So one of them is we're getting way more fine grained in kind of the interest that we have. So you know, for instance, we don't have a strobing photography interest, or I don't think we have a stop motion one either. And so getting more fine grain with all these interests, and in particular for photography, is coming so that you can really just dig deep within a certain area. Right now, we also don't do things like slideshows. And I think that a lot of those more photocentric things and photocentric feeds where you just get this beautiful stream of images that are carefully chosen to kind of be pleasing, stuff like that, we're thinking about a lot now and trying to come up with what makes the most sense. And you know, given we have a lot of photographer users, we're thinking about how best to make something like along those lines.
So this is a new way of thinking about news reading. Instead of being something like Google Reader where I subscribe to feeds, I can subscribe to interests in effect, and then you'll provide content and then watch how I read and what I read and then offer better or more interesting content as time goes by.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we also, you know, you can also have just I like to read stories from a certain place, Slate, regardless.
So you can subscribe to a page.
That's right. You can do all of those things. So we're kind of just thinking about all the dimensions along which you might care about something. Right. So you can even subscribe, you know, pretty soon to people and what they happen to be reading and doing. So it just happens to be along whatever dimension you care about.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much. Thanks for making my life better and also more busy. More time procrastinating. But the other thing I want to say really quick that I really enjoy is you guys have done a great job with the balance of imagery and text. And I just awesome work on that too. So but anyway, thanks. I'm looking forward to seeing it evolving and changing and getting better. And Twit, look at that, invites you to sign up for Prismatic.
Oh, how did you get to that page?
That's getprismatic.com/twit.
Oh. So is this going to speed up the invitation process?
Yeah, so this is a fast track that if you use today will get you in really quickly with either Twitter, Facebook, or Google Reader.
GetPrismatic, PRISMATIC.com/twit. Nice. Thank you for doing that.
Fast track to being invited.
Very cool.
There you go.
Very cool. Yeah, Brad tweeted me on Twitter. This is getting confusing, isn't it? When he noticed that I was using it and said, oh, this is good, you know. And so I think it's a really good idea. It's really cool, yeah.
What are your favorite topics that you follow?
You know, I'm trying to log in. I can't remember my password. So as soon as I log in, I'll let you know. Because I'll have a little bubble cloud. It'll tell me,
I want to see your bubbles.
Yeah, maybe you don't.
I'm interested in my bubbles.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at it recently.
Yeah, look at your bubbles.
All right, so tip of the week?
Before we do that, let's take a little break. Coming up in just a little bit, Petra Cross is here. She is not only an engineer at Google, but she's also a very accomplished photographer. I've been following her for a while on Google+. And she has a website called Stop Motionista. We're going to talk about stop motion. She's been doing a stop motion while we've been working.
Yes.
We'll see what that
If you hear weird noises, that's me doing stop motion.
With her D, is that a D800?
That's D700. I wish.
D700. You wish. Okay. You know, I love a camera with a good click, don't you? Doesn't that sound great?
Yeah, it does have a good click. And can I say something hilarious? Is people don't know what she's doing. She'll be out shooting these things, and they're just like, what is this girl?
Why are you taking so many shots?
Over there?
They think I'm a sports photographer, and I'm shooting sports with the wrong lens. Because sometimes I have like a 50mm lens.
Yeah.
And they're like, why is she doing that with the wrong lens?
Well, we'll find out why you might want to use a very wide-angle lens in just a bit. But first, let's talk about Ford, our friends at Ford. I was down at the Computer History Museum last night. Boy, that's a great place, by the way. And Ford is having an event because they're opening a Silicon Valley office to encourage the same kind of entrepreneurial thinking that goes into apps and hardware design and software design in automotive design. And it's a really interesting challenge. First of all, you've got a 110-year-old company. Ford was founded in 1903. Taking a technology that hadn't changed for perhaps the first 90 years and bringing it into the 21st century. And it's a very interesting challenge. How do you make a car company as nimble, as fast, as interesting, as up-to-date as a consumer electronics company? I think they've done some really remarkable things to do that. One example is this Silicon Valley Bureau. They have an API for, they call it AppLink, for their cars. And developers, they're encouraging developers, they're signing up developers, they're funding developers to write apps to work with Ford Sync. They even have their own. It's called My Ford Mobile App, which works with the electric vehicles, the 2012 Ford Focus to start. It'll work with the plug-in hybrid, the Energy, next year. And it does all sorts of interesting things. For instance, you can use My Ford mobile app to tell your car to charge only when it's cheapest. It saves you money. You can check for the most eco-friendly route. You can see the state of charge. If you're sitting in the living room, your car's in the garage, you can look on the mobile phone and see exactly what the car is doing right now. You can even preheat or cool the cabin while it's plugged in to save energy when you hit the road. You say, I'm going to be getting in the car at 8:30 a.m., or in Petra's case, at 10:30 a.m., and I would like that car to be 72 degrees when I get in it, and it will be ready for you, heating or cooling. And by doing that while it's plugged in, that saves you money also. I can go on and on. This is a really spectacular company that is doing high-tech stuff with what is perhaps the most American of technologies, the automobile. I want you to take a look at the 2012 Ford Focus Electric, the most fuel-efficient five-passenger vehicle in America and the most fun to drive, I can tell you, at your Ford dealer, your EVC-certified Ford dealer today. And while you're there, bring your smartphone, your BlackBerry, your iOS, or your Android phone, and they'll put the app on it, and you can see how it works. You can't drive the car with the app yet. Google has to work a little harder on that one. Anyway, visit it at Ford.com/technology or your EV-certified Ford dealer near you. We thank Ford for their support of Twit Photo. Catherine?
Yes, take it away.
Take it away, Blue Jay.
So this is a very easy, simple tip, but it will really change your photography if you shoot couples. So, Leo, will you stand up with me for a second?
Yes, we are a couple now.
Yes, we're going to be...
I've been waiting for this moment. Is Ryan still here?
No.
Oh, good.
I got rid of him.
Hey, baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, imagine yourself.
Yes.
This is going to be harder to do.
I've been doing my Pilates. I could stay like this for hours.
Can you go on your knees? Can you?
You know what that means. If I get on my knees, we're going to have to get serious here. Okay. All right.
Okay.
You're not supposed to be on your knees, too.
Go back.
Okay.
Okay, that's bad. Bring yourself back to high school dance.
Uh-huh.
How are you? Awkward, right?
Just like this, actually. I could have been on my knees. Actually, the girl was this tall.
It was like this.
It was like this. It's exactly what it was like.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you going to be going to anywhere after the dance? I was thinking we could all go to Denny's.
It's just like this.
Yeah. Let's all go to Denny's.
All right. So there's a point to this madness. We can sit again.
No, I don't want to stop. I think Petra got some incriminating photos while we were at it. There's a shot of the ceiling.
There's the ceiling in case you've never seen it. Oh, and our studio audience. The reason why I wanted to do that is it's really interesting.
Wait a minute. Pause for a moment. Okay, now you can talk.
I find that photographers, when they're first getting started, they're so worried about, you know, the lighting, the settings, the posing. They don't really think about connection between people.
It's like a high school dance.
So the reason why we were dancing like that in high school is because it was awkward.
Would have made a terrible picture.
Yeah, it would awful. Yes, but it's...
You know, I know this is true because you took some great pictures of me and Lisa in Norway, and you were looking for that moment of connection.
Yes.
Like when she put her icy hand up my shirt. There's a picture of me going... But it was a good picture.
It was very yeah. It was very true to you,
yeah,
Lou.
It was true to me, all right.
But that's the point, is when people feel awkward, like in a high school dance
right.
or in front of a camera when you're not used to being photographed,
right.
they lose that sense of connection.
So how do you
connect
them?
A lot of times, you'll notice this, photographs of couples, their hands are just kind of down around their sides. Like so the photographer says, okay, I want you guys to kiss. And so they're connecting via mouth.
Right.
But we didn't get to do that demo, Leo.
Should we try it?
They're connecting via mouth, but their hands are just kind of like the
right.
body language isn't
right.
there.
Right.
So that's my tip. Pay attention to body language. And if you're having a couple acting intimate,
right.
then tell the guy, this is your bride, scoop
right.
her up.
Right.
I want to see passion. I want to see right. connection. And if you go to my blog, the tip of it, I say space reads as space. And it's just that simple.
Or
if
distance,
there's space
yeah.
in between, yeah, distance reads as
yeah,
distance.
Yeah.
Meaning like physical distance is going to read as emotional distance. And so close that gap.
Right.
And so speaking of that, I was doing some research on Petra, and I noticed that you were on Style Me Pretty, your wedding.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So we're going to pull that up, and I actually wanted to start it off by...
Pull up my wedding?
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
They'll do it for you. But...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, the best picture is not in Style Me Pretty. Let me
yeah,
show you
they
the
don't,
best
they always
one.
Do that, don't they?
Yeah, let me show you the number one photo that we should definitely show.
So my question to you, Petra,
there.
Is being on the other side of the camera.
Look at that. That's great.
Yeah, that's amazing. How
but
can
I
that
can
not
see,
be on there?
It's interesting that you like that, Petra, because it's really so much about the scene and less about you. You're kind of distant in this.
This is actually the castle where the first Dracula movie was filmed.
Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm, 1921.
Where is that located?
It's in Orava, Slovakia.
Wow. Petra is from Slovakia.
We had the perfect weather. It was crazy raining right before the shoot, and then it was just foggy during the shoot, and right after the shoot, it started raining again. Perfect.
Wow. It looks like he's biting your neck. I just want to warn you, Brad may not be all he seems to be.
Oh.
He might have received an infection at the Nosferatu castle. Look at that. That is great and very romantic. I love your outfits. Beautiful.
Everyone was styling with in the hats. I made it mandatory.
Everybody had to wear
pissed
a hat.
Off the whole family.
Oh, yeah, I'm
love
sure everyone loved
like
that.
I love your dress, actually. That is.
And I had Fluffy there, my little puppy.
Yeah.
Fluffy I hear you had no music, no dance. Did you defy all tradition?
Well, there was no really dance floor, so we couldn't really have music. But it was all about the pictures, because that's the only thing that stays. You know, you forget everything else. But pictures are the only thing that you can look back at.
You're speaking as a photographer now.
Yeah.
Very
yes,
few
are.
Brides would say it's all about the pictures.
Well, actually, I think they all kind of do after it's
do they?
All over.
Afterwards,
yeah.
you might
it's such
say
a,
that.
It's so fast.
You don't remember
it's
anything. It's a blur.
You don't remember it anyway. Mm-hmm. And you're exhausted.
I was crying the whole time.
Oh,
no,
wow.
I'm just kidding.
So, but being on the other side of the camera, what do you think, what are some
now,
things?
Which side do you mean?
I'm talking about being photographed
being
on
the
your
model.
Wedding day.
Okay.
Yeah, being the model or just any time you're being mm-hmm. photographed. What are some tips that you can say, you know, this is ways photographers can help guide models?
Well, I think that photographers need to, if they're photographing people, they need to understand the angles of people's faces and they need to know which side is the best side. On the person, when I'm being photographed by a family member, I know they don't know my face. I know my face, so you can actually help the photographer by knowing your face and knowing how to position yourself. Like I know my left side is more photogenic than my right side. I know my nose is big, so when I take pictures, I don't take pictures from the side. And photographers should notice all these things as well, and direct the person to do the flattering angles, to stick the head forward so that you don't see the double chin, and if the person has a giant forehead like me, then, you know, zoom out. I mean, step back so that you don't have this huge fisheye-looking face in front of you with double the size of the forehead. So I guess it's all about knowing what's attractive and which angles work the best.
Do you ask your couples?
No, I just can tell what is most flattering about the people. And then I try to shoot them from that angle. Like the picture Aria was talking about, the one that made his girlfriend want to date him.
She was already dating.
I knew that
or?
I had.
She was, but then she got more excited about the guy in the picture.
Ah.
And she closes her eyes, right? And
right.
Okay. So I was standing about foot above area and shooting down at him. That's usually very flattering, unless you have a big forehead like me. But for people like Arya, if you're shooting from above, there's no chance you will see any kind of double chin and any kind of weird from below shot. So he looked really great. And from the side, he has really good angles on his face, very sharp chin, and looks very nice.
Very sharp, very sharp. So you're a Google engineer by day.
Yes.
And a stop motionista.
I come
by
out
night.
At night.
So tell me, what is a stop motionista?
Well, we can geek out about terminology. Some people say that what I do is not a stop motion, that it's really a time lapse. I looked it up on Wikipedia.
What's the difference?
Well,
that's what I
let me at. Tell you. The time lapse is, at least Wikipedia defines it as a sequence of pictures taken at regular intervals. Stop motion is more of a animation technique that right. is used in claymation. So if
it's
you
the
want
same
to do,
thing. There's still intervals, but you're doing so something in between.
The difference is that in stop motion, the camera should move at all, and only the subject moves, and probably the subject should be inanimate, but I shoot people. Or I can also shoot food and animals. And in time-lapse, the way I understand time-lapse, or I think of time-lapse when I hear the word, is clouds right. moving over the sky really fast. So I don't want to call this time-lapse. I like the sound of the word stop motion. I can call it time motion or stop lapse or come up with a new name. But who cares?
Who
it's
cares?
It's what it is.
Right.
It's a new thing.
I want to see a video so you can explain to us what it
All right.
looks like. Is this a good one, Petra in Paris?
Yes, and we need voice. We need the sound for sure.
Do you have
it's way
sound
better
on that,
sound. Yes,
Brian. So this is interesting. So
HD.
What you're doing, and it's what you were doing in here, is you're shooting a lot of stills as you move the camera around,
yes.
and the subject might be moving as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's watch the video.
Still not getting.
Is the
audio.
Music playing?
No.
There's a.
So this is a trip I took. It was actually a business trip to Paris. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I like this technique. I'm loving this.
And I took about 12,000 pictures during 2.5 weeks, and I pared it down to 2,000 pictures. So the idea is that, I mean, this is not a vacation, but it could as well be. If you're going on a vacation and you take a million pictures, you don't expect your family and friends to actually look at every single picture.
Right.
It's a torture. Like, you know, I never click on those links. I don't care that you've been to Hawaii. I've seen pictures from Hawaii. But if you take them in this way and then play them at really high speeds, people actually pay attention. There's something about the moving things and shaking things and the sound that makes people want to look at this. I think you need to zoom out. I think you zoom into this too much right now.
You've zoomed into the shot. Can you zoom out, please?
So, I mean, the thing that I find is that the storytelling is so great
yeah.
from start to beginning. So can you tell me how you're approaching these? How do you tell such a great story?
So it's important to show the entire journey, not just the points of interest, not just the, I don't know, monuments and churches. It's important to show the airport. The airport airplane food, at the beginning you saw some airplane food.
Yep.
The clouds moving outside of the airplane window. the conveyor belts. The daily things. Like, you can also do some street photography and just show the people in the places where you're visiting. This is right now the conference that I attended, my conference co-workers. These are some night shots.
This is so much more interesting than a picture of the Eiffel Tower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it gives you kind of condensed vacation, basically.
Yeah.
And I would like to do this for every major city in the world. I would find it really useful before I go somewhere to see what's there to see.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be searching for top 10 places to visit and then individually Googling each and every one to see what it looks like. You know, here you see 30 places all in 3 minutes. You can see the shops, you can see the tea rooms, the macaroon shops.
It gives you a feeling, too. It's a more emotional and more compelling
yeah.
than just static.
This is Google Paris, their cafeteria.
When you're Well, we'll get. Let's watch it some more because I have all these questions about how to do this because I want to do this. I think
She's
it's great.
Gonna, this is the answer.
Yeah, I really want to learn how to do this. I love this idea.
And this is my husband
home.
Waiting for me with pizza.
Yay!
It's so interesting that kind of like he skipping. You know, if it was just continuous motion, it's the fact that it's actually you see things at kind of discrete intervals that makes you pay attention because your brain is wired to like look for things that are moving.
I've tried to do something similar and it is not as good as this with video. So instead of trying to tell a story with video, shooting 3-second videos and then stitching them together, and that worked okay. It made a video photo album. But this is more compelling. You're right.
I guess when you do that, it requires a lot of context switching because every 3 seconds it's a completely different scene.
Right.
Here, you try to take a lot of pictures in one place and move camera as you go.
Right.
But I'm sure it's nice too.
See, it's a different technique. You know, if the the video thing is more like a video photo album. So you think of each 3 seconds as a still that's moving.
Okay.
A still that's moving because it's the same problem with stills, right? It's all discontinuous pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But here you do have some flow.
Yeah.
But also we could put up with the fact that you were at the Eiffel Tower, now you're at a macaroon shop. That's a jump.
Mm-hmm.
But it somehow doesn't seem such a big jump because everything's jumping.
Yeah, everything's
you're
jumping.
You're already used to all the flashes.
Right.
There's one more thing I want to show and maybe embarrass here, Catherine.
Uh-oh.
You shot a stop motion.
I am going to go full screen on this one.
This is at the G plus C.
And I'm going to HD... full screen.
I love how she emphasizes you need headphones.
And let me just jump straight into the scene, the infamous dance scene in the bathroom.
So you did this for the Google Plus conference.
Yes, Google Plus Photographer Conference.
Yeah. And of course, Catherine was the speaker. There's Trey Ratcliffe.
Coming up. Yeah, this was the demo I was giving, the unconference demo.
Yeah, there's Sergey with his glass, with his ex-project glass.
Get ready, it's coming up.
And there's Trey in his glasses.
You will never look at Catherine the same way again.
Petra. And Catherine dancing in the ladies' room.
This is what we do in the ladies'. This is why we go together.
This is so cute. Well, that was Karen Hutton.
Yes.
Yeah. There's Lotus.
All right.
But it is so engaging. And it's interesting because you take a conference. I mean, granted, it's a photographer's conference, and
but
it was
still,
exciting.
It couldn't have been that exciting.
But you really, you want to, I watched it a couple times, and it's a promo
looks like
for
fun.
A conference.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
And it didn't take much time to edit compared to the Paris video, because it wasn't as much work as the Paris video. I was just trying to shoot as many pictures as possible. I only had 2 days to do that, and I had to get 2,000 pictures. So I was just shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting.
Every time I saw her, she goes, I don't know how I'm going to get 2,000 pictures. I don't know how I'm going to get this.
Why 2,000? Is that how long?
Because
many...
the song is 3 minutes long, and I have 12 pictures per second.
So it's a continuous frame rate all the way through.
Yes. But you can slow things down or speed them up. If I'm shooting a scene that's too long and I'm not moving my camera fast enough, then I will speed it up later in iMovie. I can show you the editing process, actually.
I would love to know every step how to do this.
And that's actually one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Petra on is, she has a job for Google. Like, she's busy during the day, and she's producing these videos that one would think would take a lot of time. And what amazes me about how fast, this is one thing to learn about Petra,
I don't have any patience.
Yeah, so it's amazing how fast you've crafted this process, and I want you to share it with us. How can people do this themselves?
So you already saw me shooting. That's pretty much what I was doing. You just keep holding the camera and do something like this. You adjust the setting to manual mode just to make sure.
You set it manual.
Yeah, if you're outside and if you are going from the sky to the ocean, then you set it to aperture priority. But if you're indoors and you don't want the camera to have every shot looking differently.
Otherwise, you'll have some pulsing in there.
Yeah, you don't want that. You already have enough shaking as is. You don't want any kind of color, amount of light to be changing.
So get it right for kind of a medium distance.
Yes, but sometimes halfway through the pen, I look and...
it's out of focus.
And if it's too bright, then I go faster and then continue shooting.
So you'll actually dial as you go.
Yes.
And then do you tell your subjects? Because I know sometimes people are doing stuff. What do you tell them as you...
Nothing.
Nothing.
They just think I'm crazy.
And they will automatically act funny.
They just don't know what to think of it. They're like...
what are you doing?
They just hear the sound. It's disruptive. And then later they see and they're like, oh, now I know what that crazy blonde woman was doing with that weird...
So show us. Let's see what it looks like.
I take pictures like this.
You're using the burst mode, the standard burst mode?
Right now, yes. But I can go on a single shot and just work up my finger. Okay. That's what I usually do.
That's what you usually do.
See the muscle?
Well, because the burst mode will only go for 10 shots, depending on the camera.
Why do you use your finger versus burst mode?
Because if I do burst mode, it takes too many pictures, and then I would have to play it faster. I want to be in charge.
Also,
of
it, it may be too consistent, right? It might be nice to have some inconsistent timing. And then
I go into...
Are you shooting JPEGs or RAW as you shoot?
When I was in Paris, I was shooting RAW, and then I had to upload it to my laptop.
It's too slow.
And then I ran out of memory.
Yeah.
Out of space, so then I switched to JPEG.
For this JPEG, it'd be fine.
Yes, but if you shoot JPEG, you do need to know how to expose it properly so that you don't need to worry about it later when you
get it right in camera.
So let me show you what I've done so far. Today, I arrived a few minutes early.
That looks like my dog.
That's your dog?
Yeah, what's Ozzy.
What's his name? It's so cute.
He's like, Ozzy, yeah.
I came in and licked my nose, and it knew that I like puppies. So this is what I have so far.
Ozzy never had such good pictures.
And this is, how long is this? 4 seconds.
Okay.
And I'm going to show you how I'm going to add another maybe 2 second clip. So I go into...
So this is Lightroom and iMovie you're using together.
Now I go back in Lightroom and I'm going to edit this shot, the sequence of the disco ball that you have in the dining room. So what I would do, I would pick one photo, the first one, crop it to 16 by 9, which is the HD aspect ratio. Do any kind of adjustment that I need to do. Like here, I think I need to bring in more light. And maybe add vignetting or not. You can play with it as long as you want.
You could do white balance here.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I apply the same editing style to the rest of the photos in the sequence. So here...
Lightroom makes that very easy. You just copy and paste.
Command-Shift, sync settings, synchronize.
Yeah.
Now that's done, I need to...
So even the 16 by 9 aspect ratio has been copied over as well.
Yes. It applies
that's
to
important
all the pictures.
Do you have to go fine-tune it after you do them, or you just let it kind of go?
I need to fine-tune usually things that are very shaky, like the dance scene. When I'm actually moving the camera while dancing, that required a lot of cropping. I had to shrink the final size of the photo. I had to crop it in a lot. And then I was adjusting every single photo and realigning it so it shakes less.
So what did we learn? How do we not have to do that?
Well, put it on a tripod.
Okay.
But if you're standing, if you're not... I was dancing. Like, you
that's
cannot
why.
Possibly... Yeah, that's the only reason why. But it's nice to have a little shake, but not too much. When I was dancing, it was going like this. And now
so that's why it looks more steady than the camera is, because you're cropping and adjusting each picture. I get it.
And here, that now that I cropped all of these pictures to 16 by 9, I export them, and I already have a preset for this. I resize everything to 1920, which is the HD, the largest HD size that iMovie can work with. And I rename every single photo and give it a sequence number. I rename the photos because I often flip frames and change the placement of the frames. And I want these to be in that sequence that I chose in Lightroom.
So you might in Lightroom drag an image over to a different position.
Mm-hmm.
But now as you export, they are going to be numbered in that sequence, the new sequence.
Exactly. So now I add my little watermark and export it into a folder called the resize is 1920. This is going to take... Whoa. Okay, I'm in the wrong folder. I think I'm going to do it one more time. Export, and put it in another folder called resize is 920 disco ball. And export. This is going to take a few seconds. In the meantime, I open the QuickTime 7.
Do you have to have QuickTime Pro to do this, or can you just
QuickTime,
use the regular QuickTime?
What I need, actually, Lightroom is able to do this for me. What I need to do is to take these photos and convert them into .movie file.
Right.
Lightroom can do this for you at 10 frames per second. I prefer to do that at 12 frames per second, so that's what I use QuickTime Player.
QuickTime lets you set how many frames per second you're going
to
use.
It's an add-on that you need to purchase, but it's totally worth
it. QuickTime X will not do this. You need QuickTime Pro 7.
Yes.
And so you're saying set it at 12 frames a second. That's, that's what we want.
You can set it to whatever you want, and then you can speed it up or slow it down in iMovie. But I found that the 12 frames per second is like the right speed. Some people get headaches. We don't. I think people who have slow lives maybe, and who don't have like a very...
If you're epileptic, you probably shouldn't be watching any of Petra's movies.
And... I'm still waiting for a few more shots to be exported.
This is where Aperture would
almost
be a great help.
Okay, so now look what I'm doing. I'm in QuickTime Player 7. I click File, Open Image Sequence. I go into the place where it's located, which is resizes 9, 1920 mm-hmm. disco ball. And here's the sequence, 31 images. Click on any of them, hit enter. And here you pick the frame rate, 12 frames per second. It now opens a huge movie file, which will be, my laptop is not fast enough to play it.
It's so a 1920 by...
Yeah, so I'll just close it. And while I'm closing it, I save it and give it, put it into a folder called Clips, call it Disco Ball.
So now QuickTime is exporting it, and iMovie yeah. can open it.
And now I'm going to open iMovie, which I already have opened. File, import, movies.
So you're essentially just making clips out of each sequence yes. that you're going to then stitch together in iMovie.
And I can then, again, reorder them in any order I want. I can trim them if they're too long. And it's important that you have more photos than you need because your song,
right,
it would be good if you played a whole song. Right. And it's good if you have maybe 10% more pictures than you need. And once you fill up, put all the clips into iMovie, you will see that the video part is longer than the audio part, and then you start nipping and plucking little pieces, 100 milliseconds here, 200 milliseconds there, from the clips until the length of the clip matches the length of the song.
And you're probably matching the beat a little bit, too. It looks like you're playing with that.
Oh, not really.
No?
Because 12 frames per second,
so fast,
it just keeps going.
It has to hit the
beat.
So
here we have it. We just dragged it in. I'm going to drag it behind...
You know, it's great of you to share this, Petra, because there are some people who would say, hey, I just invented a new technique. I'm keeping this to myself.
I didn't invent it. I actually saw Trey Ratcliffe doing this, the same thing. And before
well,
I was
Trey's
doing...
Trey's notorious for sharing everything he does,
yes.
so that's great.
And right before I saw his stuff, I tried to do animated GIFs, which was also interesting, but
yeah.
it was quiet. And I prefer
right.
the music and the ability to play 3 minutes or 4 minutes.
Right.
And this is what it looks like now, if I play it from the top.
And here comes the disco ball. There you go. Look at that. And you
That's
went all
it.
Around. So you started to learn as you shoot what you're looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a really neat technique.
And then what about that? When you're, you know, what Leah just said.
What are you looking for?
What are you looking for when you're shooting?
I'm basically a photographer and I'm also a cinematographer. It's amazing because you can use both worlds, best of both worlds. You can geek out about the photos themselves. You can do a bunch of long exposure shots at night and then stitch them together. Or you can just focus on funny transitions and do some crazy magic like you see in movies when they go from one scene to another and come up with new and interesting ways of transitioning from one scene to another. So now that I've been doing this, I pay attention to how movies handle the transition between scenes. And I look at movies completely differently now.
If you want more detail about how to do this, Petra's put it on her blog, petracross.com, or just go to stopmotionista.com. There's examples, a link to the blog post, 2,000 photos in 3 minutes, that will give you all the details on how to do this.
I put together some clips, short 1-minute instructions about how to do different techniques. They're on stopmotionista.com. And then the videos that I made, they're all here at the bottom. You can watch them.
It does combine. It's interesting how it combines still photography with the
Let's look at
movies.
Your husband one. And this one, I wanted to show this one because for people that are just starting out, this is a cute.
This is what
short
it's like.
One.
This is what
quick
it's like
one.
To create.
I'm gonna
a
pause
startup.
This and then go HD.
This is what it's like.
Nice and sharp.
This is Brad and Prisma in the prismatic birthing process. Husband
no,
upgrade.
No, he actually he cut his hair.
Oh, how fun!
And we need the sound, because it's really cute with the sound. Please, can we get the sound?
I think we have it.
Here we go.
Aww.
Isn't he cute?
That's so cute. It's great that you documented that.
Yes.
And that's fun.
Uh-huh.
That's much more fun than 5 pictures of him getting his hair cut and his beard
yes.
shaved. I love it. Yeah.
We
so
can
you
do
know,
this
it doesn't need
kids.
To be a big production. It could be in a single mm-hmm. single.
That's
event.
What I mean. For people that are just getting started, that want to get their feet wet.
And you don't even need to have someone to shoot. You can shoot yourself. You can do a lot of self-portraits
right.
and crazy stuff in the mirror, like bathroom stuff.
Yeah.
Or hold the camera in front of you. Even if you have a little point-and-shoot, you don't even need to have an SLR camera. You don't need to have a camera that has really quick...
Not at all.
How do you call it? Shooting rate.
Right.
Yeah.
If you are patient enough, you just set the camera on a tripod and try to change what's in front of it, whether it's you or whether you're waiting for sunset to go down.
Or if you have a dog, like
Ozzy. Yes.
You know, we did this, I don't know if you remember, when we arrived in Tasmania, Peter Krogh and I, Peter shot with his SLR as we were landing the plane and just kept shooting. I'm sure he was driving the people in the seats behind him crazy, because that's the one negative of this.
Yes.
People think you're nuts.
Uh-huh.
But then when he got back down, he had several hundred pictures of us landing, and I used QuickTime to make a movie out of it.
Did he make a stop motion out of it?
Make a stop motion out of it. It works really well.
Did he have music to it?
Well, we used it I had to crank out when we arrived in Tasmania. This was 2008 or 2009.
Mm-hmm.
We needed to crank out that day of promotional videos before you arrived. That was Mikkel Olin and the Lightroom Adventure. And Mikkel and I was shooting video, and Mikkel said, "Can you make a video?" I said, "Okay, everybody, give me everything you got." And Peter had shot this sequence, so we used it in the video of us landing in Australia. It was very fun. Put music to it.
I remember that.
There's this whole new world of movie making that I know nothing about, and I'm slowly exploring it. And coming up, either discovering these new things that already someone else discovered, but I'm coming up with them on my own, which is really fun. Or I just watch a movie and then I'm like, that's cool, I'm going to do that next time.
It's the spirit of discovery and adventure, and that's key for any good artist or photographer.
It's a lot of fun.
What would you say were the biggest trial and error moments when you're first starting this? Just kind of like things, hard tips for people that are...
Well, the thing that drives me crazy is that when my camera body decides to stop autofocusing, and I do the whole sequence and then come home and realize it's blurry.
Oh, so make sure your camera's doing autofocus.
Another thing is you do need to make sure that you are exposing properly. If you suck at using manual mode, just go to aperture priority and stay there. Because you might be good at shooting towards the darker side of the room, and by the time you move here, it's just overexposed, and you cannot do anything with it. Once you put it in the Lightroom, you're screwed.
Yeah, so I think one point. Manual is great because it will be consistent, more consistent, as long as you're setting it correctly.
Know your camera. And if you don't know your camera, use automatic setting. But you still might want to know your camera, because certain scenes, you cannot shoot with aperture priority.
But you originally had an Nikon D60, and you got that in 2009. Mm-hmm. So you haven't been... How did you learn to shoot manual so quickly?
Well, I did have a SLR camera when I was 8, 9 years old. We had dark room in the house. And actually, in my kid's room, my dad decided to block like one-third of the room and build a dark room for himself. So I used to do a lot of manual shooting and developing pictures with him as a little kid. I was like standing on a little stool right next to him in the dark room. And then for many years, I didn't use SLR camera at all. And I only carried little point and shoot with me. And in 2009, when I was on Gmail team, we had this internal photography club called Photo Fridays. And I used to join them, and everyone was using SLR camera. And I realized that what they're doing, I'm unable to do with my point-and-shoot, so I got my first camera.
And then how did you learn how to shoot in manual?
The guy who was leading the Photo Friday team was big on manual settings, so he was teaching us how to do everything. He also taught us how to use strobes, external flash. So I was not even allowed to go in automatic at all. Like from day one, as soon as I showed up, I had to go into full manual mode, and I pretty much stayed there the whole time.
Sounds like Greg Gorman.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He does the same thing when you take his classes. He says
no.
Turn off all those doohickeys.
I'm a control freak, and I do like to know that it's exposed the way I told it to expose.
Right.
And when it turns out wrong, it's only my fault. I'm the only one to blame.
It is a challenge, though, because you're taking a lot of pictures very rapidly, so you have to pay attention.
But I think that's the reason why I bring that up, is that because it is so...
Yeah.
Like, if your exposures were changing the way the aperture priority often does, there's no consistency.
I don't think you can even shoot the dance scene with aperture priority unless it's bright outside. Because you're moving and you need to go at least at 200th of a second so that you eliminate any kind of blur.
Yeah.
Because both the subject's moving and the camera's moving, because I'm holding it while I'm moving.
Yeah.
So,
it teaches you. It's a good school for you to learn how to use manual mode.
That's a good point. Petros, very nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I can't wait to get out there and take some pictures and do this. It looks like a lot of fun.
I received a few of these that people did. Puppy!
See, Ozzy's back. He says, I'm ready for more photography.
Some people were inspired by what I did, and they sent me their stop motions, and I was so proud of them. I was like,
that's great. That's really neat.
Motivated them.
And Aria Hagigi.
Hagigi. You had to try.
Getprismatic.com/twit if you want to get Prismatic. Thank you for setting that up for us.
Yeah, no good
problem. Good luck with the startup to both you and to Brad. That's great.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here. We also thank Joseph for showing us...
Yeah, thank you so much, Joseph.
...why I should be using Aperture.
We'll see if it sticks.
I'm going to use... Well, see, but you showed us how to use Lightroom to do this. I have to go back to...
Relearn.
I bet I could do it in Aperture. I'll figure it out. There's got to be a way to do the same thing.
Just look at Joseph's.
Yeah,
Joseph has a good resource on his blog, on his website.
And thank you, Catherine. CatherineHall.net. That's Catherine's blog, and her tip of the week is there.
Yes, it is.
Anything else coming up you want to tell us about?
We are talking about timescapes and time lapse. We're having Tom Lowe come in. You know, the king of timescapes.
The king of...
Oh, you'll see.
I'll see.
Coming at the end of June.
Very cool.
He's the one that got me really... You know Tom Lowe's work, right?
No. What is a timescape?
I have no idea, I can't wait. We're going to find out.
Tune in on the last week in June.
Okay. For timescapes. Not the movie timescapes.
Yes.
Oh, you know, Tom just sent me the very high-resolution version of that movie so that I could play it back on my Retina display.
Oh.
After the show, we'll both watch.
So he's going to come on?
Really? Oh, that's if you want to see it, it's on YouTube. There's a trailer for it. There's a 4K trailer for it. It's really stunning. He's going to be here.
Absolutely.
I can't wait. I'm very excited.
So, that should be fun. That's not next week. Fun. It's the week after.
We do Twit Photo every Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern Time, 20:30 UTC. If you're in Slovakia at Nosferatu's castle, then you could watch it then. If you miss a show, don't cry. It's okay. We make them available audio and video, although you're going to want to watch the video at our website, twit.tv, but you can also subscribe anywhere finer podcasts are aggregated. On behalf of Catherine, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twit Photo.